Good morning and welcome all. Welcome to the Amador County Board of Supervisors meeting for Tuesday, June 25th. The board met in closed session earlier in regards to item one, report from staff. Nothing to report at this time on item one. On item 2A, nothing to report. On item 2B, report from staff and direction was given. On item 3, report from staff and direction was given. And on item 4, the minutes were approved by the board. And with that said, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag. Republic for which it stands.
Once again, thank you all for being here. Just like to state at this time, Chairman Richard Forrester, Supervisor, is not here. He's on a well-deserved a vacation. And on down, agenda.
I'm going to make a motion to approve the agenda with a correction to item number 9 should be not the chairman's signature, but how about the chairman's signature?
Second.
Okay. There are a motion by Supervisor Onetto and second by Supervisor Plaz with the change of item number 9. Any other further questions? Okay, with a motion and a second, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. There you have it. Thank you. Moving on down to public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board upon this time within the jurisdiction of Amador County Board of Supervisors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff or committee for a report and recommendation. Please note there's 3 minutes per person. Anybody from the public?
I think Linda Van Vleck wanted to be here for this. This is one of her grandchildren, is she?
She's here.
Well, I didn't see her back there.
She's in the back.
A little louder. Can't hear you.
Can you speak in a mic, please, young lady? Thank you.
There you go.
There you go. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Danielle Denton, and I'm from the Valley 4-H Club. Thank you for supporting 4-H. I enjoy 4-H because it teaches me.
Thank you.
Dad.
Hello, my name is Nicole Denton, and I am from Shenandoah Valley 4-H Club. I would like to thank you for supporting 4-H. 4-H taught me community.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Hello, my name is Macy Denton, and I'm in Shenandoah Valley 4-H. Thank you for supporting 4-H. 4-H taught me leadership.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Hannah Wilkinson. I am a member of Willow Springs 4-H Club, and I do pigs and horses for 4-H, and I also include presentation day. I've been to county sectionals and state with this presentation.
Congratulations.
Hi, I'm Grayson Santinelli, and for 4-H, I do pigs, chickens, and rabbits, and I went to a state fair. I do presentation day, too.
Thank Looks you. Like you did pretty well at State Fair.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Gracie.
Hello, my name is Robbie Woolsey from Willow Springs 4-H. This is my third year doing 4-H, and I do pigs.
it's stressful speaking in front of a crowd, huh?
I think.
Last year I got reserve champion at the fair.
All right, Robbie.
Good job. Pretty good.
Got a pig going to the fair this year?
Yes.
We'll be looking for you.
Thank you for supporting.
He said as a fat hoghead.
Thank you.
My name is Cade White. I show chickens, rabbits, and turkeys. Thank you for supporting 4-H.
Thank you.
My name is Mason Wilkinson, and I raise swine. And thank you for supporting 4-H.
Thank you, too. And good luck at the fair, too.
I'll jump in here real quick while he's signing in there. I'm William Bullard, and I've been participating in Amador County 4-H since I was young myself, and I enjoyed it, and I participate, enjoyed being able to do that and learn lots of things. And now that I'm a leader, I'm able to pass on that knowledge to these young people here, and it's afforded me the opportunity to, again, pass on that knowledge, that I got and gained from those generations before me. So I, again, like they've all said, thank you very much for supporting 4-H and allowing us to pass on our knowledge to the younger generation out there.
Thank you for all your time and effort.
Yes.
My name is Blake White.
Hi.
This is my first year. Turkeys, chickens, and rabbits.
All right. That sounds like a lot of fun. A lot of work, too, huh?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Rielle Waters-Santinelli. I'm the Willow Springs Community Club leader. I'm the 4-H Council president. I lead poultry and rabbits. And some of these kids here are mine, and some are friends, and Will and I did 4-H together growing up, along with his sister and my sister, who's in the back with the baby running in and out. And so I've been involved in 4-H for over 20-some-odd years on paper, a lot longer, not on paper. So it's really kind of fun to pass on this knowledge to the kids that I learned, along with public speaking. Hannah and Mason, for example, going to state, they got gold, and they were the only ones that represented Amador County. So it was pretty kind of special this year that they got to do that. So thank you for supporting 4-H.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ariel.
Hi.
Hi.
I think you guys know him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Larry Clausen. Uh-huh. Larry, retired 4-H program coordinator, and I'm Jennifer Garrell's current 4-H program coordinator. Between the two of us, I think, 40? 26 for me now. So, yeah, I lean a lot on Larry still, but what I wanted to share with you, too, is we are ending the 4-H year with 144 members and 43 4-H volunteer leaders. We're always looking for new 4-H leaders, always, and to lead more projects in 4-H. I know I mentioned this, I believe, last time, but it is the 100-year celebration of 4-H in California. And so we're really going to be displaying a lot at the Amador Fair. And, of course, you're all invited to come to the fair, and Sunday is the Junior Livestock Auction. So we'd love to see you there, and we'll have animals there that are going to be in the auction. So if you can make it, that would be wonderful, and I'm sure we'll see you there otherwise. And I don't know, Larry, what would you, do you have anything else you would like to share?
I'm just glad that 4-H is alive and well in Amador County, and thank you all for your wonderful support.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you,
Larry.
Thank you.
We're glad it's
alive
and well.
Thank you all.
My biggest challenge is usually depleting the balance in our checking account before my wife takes the book to the junior livestock auction.
Thank you.
Any other public matters?
Good job, kids.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
You know, you had to get up early this morning to be here. We appreciate it.
We'll see you at the fair. Thank you. Anybody else from the public have any public matters? Any board members? Okay, I have something small. Terry Sanders, our veteran service officer, is asking this board to support SB 296. SB 296 is the funds that we're hoping to be increased for veterans. These funds have not been increased since 1998, so I'm going to ask that staff maybe here in the future do something in regards to putting this on the agenda so we could bring this forward so that the board could take some kind of action. Board of this assembly bill would help all the veterans in the state of California, the Veterans Affairs Department of state of California, in regards to requesting more money be allocated to the veterans. For those that don't know, we have 22 veterans a month in the last year commit suicide. So I'm going to ask that the CAO look into this and maybe bring it back at a hearing, a meeting in regards to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I did think of a couple of things. Just for informational purposes, whenever we got a room full of people, I like to take advantage of it. And that is, first off, our county museum was reopened last weekend. It was a great collaborative effort between this board and the Amador County Historical Society. A lot of volunteer labor went into that project. They did a beautiful job both inside and outside the museum. The displays are all redone. The entire building is repainted inside out. A lot of ADA work was done to make it ADA compliant. And just so if you have an opportunity, it's really worth taking a look at it. If you love Amador County and its history, there's a lot there to see. So that was one thing. And the other thing, we just had our report from our community college coordinator. I serve as the chairman on the Community College Foundation, and with the advent of the ITV classes that we have available at the Sutter Hill Transit Center, and the online course studies that you can achieve a full AA degree that we have available up at the HHS building. We have a total of 33 students already signed up to take college courses in pursuit of various areas of study for the fall 2013 semester, and they are registered and signed up for classes. So neat opportunity and a good accomplishment, and everybody should be aware of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Players. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, we're going to move on down to the consent agenda.
Take a motion. Mr. Chairman, approve consent agenda.
Thank you, Supervisor Boitano.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Thank you, Supervisor Almedo.
Just under discussion, and I see Jim here, so I'm going to throw it out there. I chatted with Chuck in the back. If when we have these situations, and I realize it's coincides with our fiscal year, but we've got 15 or so lengthy contracts in our consent agenda to review. If those could be presented in our agenda packets in a tracked changes version, a Word document with the tracked changes showing the changes that have been made in the contract from last year to this year, it would be very helpful for us in reviewing those contracts, not having to look for what's been changed, but just having it shown in red. Once we approve it, then you can accept changes, print the document, sign it, and we're good to go. And just be much more efficient for us. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from the board? Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda with the recommendation that Supervisor Plaz had mentioned. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? There you go. Thank you, gentlemen. Moving on down to regular agenda, item 5, Amador County Civil Grand Jury Final Report, Discussion and Possible Action Relative to a Presentation for the 2012-2013 Amador County Civil Grand Jury Final Report. Morning.
Good morning. I'm not sure I can follow those wonderful kids and baby goats.
That's a tough act to follow.
My name is Marianne Bourgeois, and I am the foreperson for the 2012-2013 Amador County Civil Grand Jury. Our jury was made up of 19 people from all corners of the county, from Fiddletown and River Pines, Comanche, Ione, Sutter Creek, Jackson, Pine Grove, Pioneer, Volcano, and Buckhorn area. We come from a variety of backgrounds and experience. We are state workers, home care workers, construction and business owners, city government managers, as well as retired folks. But we had a common purpose, to do the best that we knew how to investigate, evaluate, and recommend changes to the county that we live in. Several members of the grand jury are in the audience today. As the grand jury, we conducted 7 investigations and 4 inspections. We received 15 citizen complaints, 8 of which were incorporated into our investigations, and 4 of which we had no jurisdiction. We conducted 27 interviews and 24 school site visits. We spent several hours per week over 11 months in meetings, evaluating facts, coming up with conclusions or findings, and making recommendations that are both beneficial and financially feasible to the county. Today, I present to you the 2012-2013 Amador County Civil Grand Jury's final report. This report will be available at the end of today on 2 online locations, the Superior Court website, which is www.amadorcourt.org, and it'll be under the Court News and Notices section, and on the Amador County's website at www.co.amador.ca.us under Latest News. That's all I have today, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Board members, questions?
Yeah, I had a comments and questions. I got a chance to review your report and as much of it as I could so far, and in contrasting it with other grand jury reports, I find it to be very fair-minded and objective, and I haven't noticed that tendency in some earlier reports. So I just want to commend you on your ability to go through the, as you stated, 15 complaints. Things become apparent over the years that sometimes grand jury complaints can be politically or ideologically driven sometimes, and it's your task and the task of a grand jury to sort of weed through those and not allow that political bias or ideology to enter into your decision making, and I think it shows in your report this year that you did that and did it objectively and very well. So I want to commend you on that.
Thank you. This group worked very hard to do that. So it wasn't always easy, but...
No, I'm sure it's not, but it's obvious that you did, so I just wanted to commend you on that. And also wanted to ask, this board, at least for the time that I've been on it, has always been sent a list of proposed grand jurors for selection by the courts. They send it to the board and ask for our comments. I think... historically, in recognition of the fact that collectively the 5 of us up here know a whole lot of people in the county and have had many interactions in various ways with those people. This year, when I asked how they wanted us to weigh in on some of the folks on that list, whether it be verbally or through written request, the question was raised by this year's grand jury judge. I don't know what the proper terminology is there, but basically raised the question, well, why is that necessary? Why do we even do this? And I haven't heard a response back from them since I asked how they wanted us to present that information. So I guess my question to you is, do you feel that it's valuable to have a certain degree of, I won't call it screening, but just weighing in by your elected officials as to some of the proposed names that come up on that list? And
I really can't say for Judge Hermanson because I don't know his thought process and things. But for us as a grand jury, we didn't know you had done that. So it worked out better for us not to know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know that we know what the end result of that is, but we're asked for our comments and concerns, and some of us attempt to submit them. And I don't think it's a bad process for the citizens of the county to see their concerns and so forth expressed through their elected officials. And
right now there's 52 names for the next grand jury, and on the first they'll draw 29 names out of that, 19 of which will be the jury and 10 alternates. And I don't know anything other than that process. That's required by penal code, so I don't know about the rest of it.
The only thing I say, you know, the 21 years I've been here, you know, we've always been sent that list to go through, and I always go through it, try to be objective. And there's some people I know that could be a potential problem, you know, and I put either plus or minus or highlight it and send it in. But I don't think I've ever heard back from the presiding judge about any of this. So I don't know whether they look at it or not, or just maybe it's a courtesy to us. It'd be nice to get an answer, because
it would be. It would be. And not to see the procedure ended when it's been going on for so many years, in recognition of the vast number of people that we know and represent.
I will mention it to Judge Hermanson.
You know, also, I would like to basically did what Supervisor Plass said, especially as far as the fairness of the report. I didn't read all of it. I got a nasty cold right after I got this report, so I'd read some of it, and about 2 days ago, I woke up, it was like 7 o'clock in the evening. I thought, geez, I want to go sweet talk my wife and make some French toast. That was my first thought. I woke up and I go, wait a minute. It's not morning. It's night. So,
did she make you French toast?
I didn't even ask her. But I just
smart, man.
So I haven't done due diligence in reading the report, so my apologies for that. But what I had read, I did like how you took notice as far as our contingencies are not where they should be, in that. Seemed like whoever did that, whatever members of the grand jury looked at the budget, seemed to look at it pretty close and dig into it. I really appreciate that. So, overall, the report seemed very, what I've read, it seemed very fair-minded, looking for the facts. And I thank you folks for your service to the county.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you also. I know it's time-consuming, many, many hours. My wife had spent two times, I believe, on the federal grand jury, and I know it was time-consuming for her, so I just want to say thank you to all the county people that put in those hours and do those investigations, and thank you very much.
Now, I want to ditto all those comments. It's a lot of work. I appreciate all your hard effort, and you all did a great job. Thank you for your service.
Well, we'll have our comments back in 90 days or less, I hope.
Thank you. September 23rd.
Not that you're counting.
Thank you,
Vice Chairman's job to answer.
Any public comment in regards to the grand jury report? Okay, hearing none, we're going to move on down to item 6. Administrative agency discussion and possible action relative to adoption of a resolution opposing a proposed listing and designation of critical habitat for yellow-legged frog.
I wish members of the grand jury, I guess ex-grand jury, they had to stay here and listen to this if they had time. It's pretty interesting. Appreciate that.
Not that we're counting.
Mr. Hoffman, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this resolution, we can look at this resolution a couple of different ways and make some revisions to it as you see fit. The purpose of it was just to notify the public that you're opposed to the listing of the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog, and we first off ought to make that little notation there. There are a couple of different types of species of yellow-legged frogs, and it's the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog, so I apologize. We should kind of make that notation in there. Anyway, it's proposed for listing and designation of critical habitat in Amador County. It's from the eastern end, Bear River up to the, all the way to the eastern border of Amador County. Also in that same area is the designation for some routes that will be closed to OHV use. And so we put kind of combined those things into one resolution just to express the opposition to that work of the federal government. The what we could do is divide that into two resolutions very easily, and one resolution for the Fish and Wildlife Service and one for the Forest Service. We could also keep it combined. One of the things I would suggest that if we kept it combined would be to focus more on the land, for example, move the third whereas to the top and say, whereas the eastern part of Amador County, beginning from Bear River Reservoir east to the county line, is used by residents of, and visitors of Amador County for OHV hiking, hunting, fishing, grazing allotment, timber management, other uses. And then from there, say, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service has also proposed this area for the listing of yellow-legged frog and the critical habitat designation and so on, and that, just so it's more about the land rather than taking one action and another action. But anyway, that was the purpose, was just to notify the public of the opposition of the board. And
on your title in the resolution, John just pointed this out to me, in the matter of resolution approving the United States Fish and Wildlife Service proposal to list the yellow-legged frog as an endangered species through its range. Should we have approving?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Full disclosure, that was Supervisor Onetto's catch this morning. I just pointed it to Lewis.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Disapproving.
Disapproving. Disapproving would be better. I, you know, I didn't title it when I put it on. I'm sorry. My fault.
Well, those things happen.
Yeah.
We're going to approve a resolution.
Approve the resolution. Yes,
proposing.
I didn't catch that. And then disapproving the federal actions. Yes.
You know, Mr. Hoffman, all told, how many acres is this about? About 2 million acres is going to be affecting?
Yes, in all of the counties. For the critical habitat, I forget, I haven't really paid much attention to the whole designation, but it's in a number of counties. And
all
then,
the way to Yosemite.
Beyond Yosemite.
Yeah.
It goes down to Fresno. Area. And then there is the distinct population segment that is below that from the Tehachapis north, and it'll combine with the designation in south of the Tehachapis. So it's a whole lot of land.
And the thing is, too, I think what people don't realize, when they designate, you know, an endangered species, it puts severe restrictions on use of that land. And whether people want to recreate there, whether they want to manage it for timber, whether they also want to manage it for fire reduction, I mean, it's the litany of stuff that it makes, if not impossible, but very hard to do or get accomplished, is huge. And I think it's something that I think Congress and our federal senators, they need to address it, because its impact in this nation, our economy, especially rural areas. It doesn't seem to have too much effect in urban areas. I guess they built over everything, so there's not too much they can save there, but they can come up and shut down everything up here. And I think it's good. It's a real problem. And I know, because I grew up in the mountains, and I've watched it get thicker and thicker with debris and brush and junk. And one time we're logging a parcel of land, we have the Bear River, and I'd drive in and out every day, maybe twice a day. And you'd see all these dead trees and all this thick brush, and I'd ask the Forest Service, and I said, hey, you've got these dead trees. They are a hazard to us driving in, because it was like probably 10, 12 miles back into clear on the Bear River. And there's all these dead trees there, and some days it's windy, and you're driving in dead trees, and you see some of them are kind of actually half broken off. Kind of, you see they cracked and were hanging. And they said they didn't really respond. And so finally, I can't remember if we sent them a letter or threatened to send them a letter after numerous calls. And we're going to say, hey, we're going to put you on notice that you're putting us in danger. And then the Forest Service said, we don't have money to do it, but if they mark them, would we go and follow them for them? And I thought, that's kind of like, you know, taking out somebody else's garbage. But I thought, well, do you want to live on Edo, or do you want your workers to be safe? And so I went out and fell with trees. And some of them were still salvageable, so I asked the Forest Service, can I buy those trees? They said, oh, no, spotted owl habitat, you know, endangered species. You can't get off the road. And I said, well, some of them are falling on the road. Can I buy the ones that fall on the road? You know what they told me? No. I said, what do I do with them? They said, push them off the road. So I pushed trees anywhere from, I don't know, a foot to 5 foot in diameter off the road and down the hill. And there was just, that whole canyon was, all, wherever you looked, there's a lot of dead trees, a lot of stuff. And, you know, dead stuff does, it dries out and burns. And it was about, I don't know, 6 years later, we had the power fire come through. And it went through, and I used to be driving that property. I really enjoyed driving in there. It was beautiful. It was really nice. It was good for the soul. I almost never go back anymore because every time I do, I come out of there spitting nails and matter in hell because it looks like a bomb went off in there. So I think the American public needs to wake up and say, yeah, do we want to protect species? Sure. But at any cost. So we watch the forest catastrophically burn and all sing Kumbaya, dance around a circle, how wonderful it is. It's sad. And this is just one more segment of it. Watching some more of the, calling it what it is, idiocy. Do we want species to go extinct? No. But sometimes they do. And part of the issue I have with this thing, too, is they're going to shut all the land down. What we find is part of the problem with the yellow-legged frog is it's got some type of disease that's killing it. And they plan to fish in a lot of lakes, which eat the frogs. And also bullfrogs, I guess, like yellow-legged frogs. So they're basically severely restrict the use of the public use of the national forest for really nothing. And it's happening. And it's got to be addressed. It's not just a yellow-legged frog. You've got the spotted owl, black-bearded woodpecker, yellow-legged frog. It goes on and on and on. Any species they find that's a little bit different than some other species is a subspecies and can be endangered. So if you found somebody with red hair and for whatever genetic mutation they had, one blue eye and one brown eye, that'd be a new species of human. So anyway, just my ranting and raving, so sorry for going on so long. But
suffice to say, you're very passionate about this.
I'm just real. I'm real sick and tired of it.
Yeah. You know, I wonder what they're trying to do too. This march, I had to run back to Idaho, and I was listening to the radio on the way back, and they were talking about the Lahontan cutthroat, and they're one of the species that eats yellow-legged frogs. So, what are we trying to do here? They're trying to bring that species back from extinction. And now the, you know, it's food, the frog. I just don't know what we're doing here. And when you try to preserve the habitat, sometimes you end up losing the whole thing. That happened
yes.
In Southern California with a kangaroo mouse or rat or whatever it was, and they wouldn't let people clear around their properties. Had a big fire, and they lost all the habitat, including a lot of human habitat. So I just wonder what they're trying to do here.
Mr. Hoffman, from what I got here, it says about 2 million acres, 14 counties, 9 national forests, and it's about 30% larger than the state of Delaware. But it says if this keeps going the way it's going, the transit corridors and the buffer zones that are added at a later date could increase it by tenfold. That's a pretty large area.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure that I would go along with all of that statement, though, just for the record. You know, it is possible, yeah. Generally, the Fish and Wildlife Service proposes a large area of critical habitat because they can shrink that habitat through public comment, but they can't add to it without coming back with a whole new proposal. They don't like to come out with a whole new proposal. But here's the thing that I am concerned with. It's not the idea of the Endangered Species Act. It's not the idea of critical habitat. I think both of those are good laws and provisions. But the problem is they are not implemented well at all. In fact, they're implemented very poorly. The first decision is a listing that should say, is this species in trouble? Just a pure statement. Is it in trouble or is it not? I think that's good for us to know. The second one is, how much do we care? And that's the thing that gets lost down the road. It could be something we really don't care about at all, but you have to treat it the same way as though you really, really cared about a species. And it interferes with all the planning, so that there is no logic in it after that. The designation of critical habitat is for the purpose of declaring essential habitat for the conservation of the species. Therefore, anything that is not critical is not essential to the species or has been determined that it is a higher and better use for something else. But the Fish and Wildlife Service ignores critical habitat designation, and this is where it expands. They still evaluate everything for a jeopardy opinion, whether it's critical habitat or not. So it has nothing to do with whether or not there has already been a determination that there's a higher and better use of that particular land. It can then be overruled by the Fish and Wildlife Service. So it enables, so you go through all this planning, but it adds another whole bureaucracy level of planning to where you can never plan. What can you do with this land?
Yeah. So you're saying they're making a blanket coverage, basically, of a huge area.
They are.
Rather than designated critical areas that...
Yes, we go through this exercise, but in the end, it's meaningless.
Well, and we see that on this, because they've named Squaw Ridge, which, if any of you have traveled any of those areas up behind Silver Lake, it's the Mormon Immigrant Trail. It's where the wagon trains came across for 150 years, or 150 years ago. They've designated that as some of this critical habitat area. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's as dry as the top of this deck right here. There's no amphibious, you know, creatures up there that need a moist habitat for that. But they've designated all that area, and it supports the Forest Service's then recommendation to close off historic trails and historic roads that have been traveled by wheeled travelers for 150 to 200 years with no net gain other than the impact to our recreational community. They've taken Beebe Lakes, which is a short hike off of that four-wheel drive accessible road to go into Beebe Lake if somebody wants a wilderness experience in fishing, and they're killing all the fish in Beebe Lake because potential habitat for a yellow-legged frog. So they can go in there and gill net and kill everything out of Beebe Lake and call it success for the frog. And just the science is just so flawed here. With regards to some of these listings, I recently proposed trying to help mitigate some of these issues between hikers and equestrian folks that want a more serene environment, if you will, and the OHV community. And through our RAC program, I tried to initiate not the construction of, but the recognition of an existing trail that emanates out of the Silver Lake Basin and gets access to the wilderness area much quicker. It's a trail that my family used for generations, bringing cattle out of the mountains and down into the resort to ship out from there. It's still used today for that purpose. But the Forest Service would not recognize that trail on their maps as an equestrian and hiking trail only because they found the presence of what is a threatened plant species, something Lewisia, on the Forest Service's list. Now, that plant is not listed on the U.S. Listing of endangered plants. It's not listed on the California's endangered plants, but it's listed on the Forest Service's own internal threatened species list of plants. And I asked them, I said, well, you've found this plant in some of these most rugged areas along the existing four-wheel drive routes that have been wheel traveled for 150 years. Where else have you looked for it? And the Forest Service's response was, well, we don't have the funding to look for this threatened and or endangered species everywhere. And so they've found it where they've looked for it. They haven't found it where they haven't looked for it, but it's on their own internal threatened species list and therefore closes off a trail that would mitigate the conflict between OHV use and hikers and equestrians, provide quicker access into the wilderness area, and the trail's there already. But they won't recognize it and therefore or do any improvement on that trail because of the existence of a plant they found there where they haven't looked for it anywhere else. It's just preposterous. And that's the kind of thing that's going on here. To John's point of the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog versus all the other yellow-legged frogs, and therefore it's endangered, we saw the write-up that to determine the difference, you have to calculate the ratio of the length of the frog's hind leg as a ratio to the distance between its snout on its nose. And that's how you'll be able to discern the difference from a Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog and any other yellow-legged frog. But it's listed as endangered and closes off the public's access to all of these areas to recreate as the public would like to recreate on public lands. And somewhere's got to stop.
It's got to stop.
Well, just for the benefit of the public, recently at CSAC annual, the meeting we just had, Ledge Conference, thanks, Ted, getting old, can't think of stuff. The Rural Caucus, we talked about this problem, and the problem, what happens is you get the Center for Biological Diversity or the Sierra Club goes down the road, and they don't like what's going on, and they file a lawsuit, and it all gets locked up, and it gets jammed down our throat. And so there was a lot of talk about this at CSAC.
And they get paid for filing the lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
Under the Equal Access and Justice Act.
The Forest Service doesn't have the money, and so fast forward, it takes years and years and years to work through the process, and meanwhile, all these rural counties are devastated from the loss of tourism.
No question.
It really hurts, among other things.
Oh, it does. And a lot of things people don't realize. Well, just, you know, your, maybe your recreation industry kind of goes away, or your timber industry kind of goes away, and this maybe some of your local cattle people kind of start running less cattle, and people don't quite understand why. We used to run cattle. Our family did in the mountains, so that's why I'm real familiar with them. And finally, we got so fed up with the Forest Service and just malarkey. We left. So we run a lot less cattle, which is a little bit less economy for Amador County, a little less for our nation. And the cattle used to kind of keep the birch in check. I was up in Caldor area a week or two ago, and I was like, holy cow, I'd never seen, you know, the birch, sweet birch growing like that in my life. It was 10, 15 feet tall, and normally cattle kept kind of in check, and it was just growing wild. And then I thought, you know, it's kind of like almost going back in time as we live my childhood to a certain degree. I thought, I'll take the old Caldor railroad grade and drive down that road. It used to be, it was a pretty decent road. You could take a
fire equipment vehicle through there easy. Yeah.
Very easy. We actually used to take our bobtail cattle truck, actually truck and trailer up through there. So it was a passable road. It wasn't the nicest journey for a big rig, but you could do it. I had a hard time getting my pickup through. And I'm going along, I think, man, it's probably 15, 20 years since I've been down this road. Am I on the right road? I'm serious. I traveled that road as a kid. So I was probably in my early 20s, probably once a week. And I'm going along thinking, shoot, I better turn around. This thing, this is a goat trail. And I thought, well, I can't turn around. There's not room. There's too much brush. It's too rough. And there's some areas that's washed out. They got some logs stuck in the hole and a little caution tape and whatever. And the culverts, I think, collapsed. And so the water's running over the top, and it's washing out the side of the road, and there goes a lot of sediment. I'm thinking, boy, if I did sediment like that, some kind of job, I'd have people, they'd be throwing me in jail and sending me notice of fines. But the real point I'm making is, this is used to be a fairly major road to access the area between Caldor and, like, Grizzly Flat Road. And if you ever have a fire down in that canyon, it'd be a very crucial, critical road to get in to fight that fire. You can barely get a pickup through, and I don't think you'd get a fire truck through. You might, maybe it's four-wheel drive. And it's like that all through the mountains, and then you watch your mountains burn, and there's communities down in that area. So you get this big old ripping fire up there that can't access it except for by helicopter, maybe. It's a real problem. It's a real threat to our forests. It's actually a real threat to our communities. I mean, when I was a kid, the roads were open. They're graded. They're in pretty good shape. And what I see happening now is it's a disaster waiting to happen. And we've seen different fires burning, you know, catastrophically, when it burns, it just absolutely wipes out the land. And you go, well, okay, these people out, you know, worrying about endangered species, you don't see them complaining about these 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 acre, basically clear cuts. People should be screaming about it. Anyway, and I don't necessarily blame the local Forest Service people. I think that a lot of them are doing the best they can. I blame the people at the top, because it's not happening just in Amador County or El Dorado County or Calaveras or Placer. It's happening everywhere. So it has to be direction coming from very high echelons. And that's where I'd like to see Congress get off their butt and our federal senators do likewise and address this. I mean, yeah, what they got to do is they got to be out there, they got to advocate, and they got to inform the people what's going on. Say, hey, folks, we know you want to take care of the environment, but there's this threat here. I'm here to represent you folks. I see this threat. They need to be out there putting that forth in there. And some of them are, but a lot of them are not.
Well, I mean, the other thing that they're going to have, their public meeting, they're going to have it down in Yosemite in the middle of the tourist season. You can hardly get around down the valley now, so they're going to have this public hearing down there. That doesn't make a lot of sense, too. Sounds like it's another thing jammed down our throat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, talking to the Idaho relatives over the last couple of weeks that were here visiting us, and it's starting to happen up there, too. They're starting to get closed stuff off. And before, and I go up there quite a bit and ride my UTV, and I was impressed. You know, they would open up a lot of trails and keep them open and brush them. They'd return back there, and if there was a problem spot, they'd bring in a cat and spruce that up. And I know one area I went through a creek and almost tipped my rig over, and my uncle said that they went in there and blasted that rock out because it was a real hazard for people. Those are the kind of things you know, the land belongs to us, the people. And it shouldn't be keep people out, locked out.
I agree with many of the comments said here at this board meeting from board members and from Mr. Hoffman.
Other comment?
Yeah. Anybody from the public like to comment on this issue that we have for us? Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, folks, for listening to some of the reasoning behind the decisions you read about us making. You read the abbreviated version in the paper, some of the reasoning behind it there you've listened to today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks for staying.
Name is Terry Nielsen from Pine Grove. I agree with you. This is our land, and I do believe that we need to start asserting ourselves. This is land use that we need to be responsible for in this county. The county is responsible for land use, not the federal government. It's time you start moving in the direction of Apache County, Arizona. We all know about what's going on there. That's a real success story, and it's bringing back their economy. But what I'd like also to state that this resolution is a good solution, but it's only a start. Now their action has to be taken. And I'd like to make a recommendation. Put ATC, the travel management plan. Get these roads in our AMROR management plan. We start having bases that we start having some say on these roads. And I think putting ATC on it, ACTC, on this.
Oh, ACTC, okay.
Would be very beneficial in maybe having some impact on these roads. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. One of the other problems I noticed just before you come up, you know, at our meeting in Sacramento is not all of us were on the same page.
Yeah.
We had a supervisor from Calaveras County. Oh, we get along just fine with our force supervisor. We don't have any problems with him. How come you don't get along with yours over there? I mean, so we all got to be on the same page. I just had to throw that in.
I agree with Supervisor Boitano's statement. I was there when that statement was made.
It was made by a supervisor that would be more than willing to see every access to the public land closed off other than hikers.
Yeah, but I wonder if he was speaking for the whole board. That's my...
Yeah.
That board over there now is so fractured that...
Yes, sir.
Mark Bennett, Pine Grove. I support the resolution before you, both in terms of the insane designations of critical habitat and the road closures. I also want to say it makes me proud to live in Amador County, and the intelligent, thoughtful discussion I heard earlier just reinforces that. Also, I want to, in a sense, reiterate what Terry said earlier, that I hope this resolution is a beginning to take jurisdiction and over the forest. I fully realize that's a courageous act, and I say that in that context.
Thank you, Mark.
Hand them out to the courageous act done by Sheriff DeAugustini in El Dorado County this last week.
Yeah, that was a mention. That was good.
That was very good.
I'd like to have that discussion with our sheriff and get at that possibility.
Any other comments from the public? Bring it back to the board.
Make a motion to adopt the resolution.
with this changes...
The changes recommended by John.
John Hoffman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll second
that. And the change that we're adopting a resolution opposing
right.
the listing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Disapproving.
Thank you, Supervisor Plass.
Thank you for catching it.
Right. Motion by Supervisor Boitano and seconded by Supervisor Onetto.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion from board members? Okay, we have a motion to adopt a resolution made by Supervisor Boitano, seconded by Supervisor Onetto. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? There you have it. Thank you. Moving on down to items.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you,
John. Folks.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Mark. Gary.
Moving on down to item 7, Community Development Agency discussion and possible action relative to the alternative selection and grant application preparation regarding the Fiddletown Road at Shenandoah Road intersection. Gary, that yours?
All right, thank you, sir. Gary Rinking, Amador County Public Works. So we're here today to continue the discussion with Shenandoah Fiddletown Road intersection possible improvements. Just wanted to just go over some of the kind of how we got here. First of all, this project is identified in our current CIP. Back in mid-April, Caltrans had requested or put out the call for projects for HSIP funding, which is a federal funds for safety projects. As a result of that, county staff, along with ACTC, their engineer, and the city of Plymouth, kind of mobilized to develop some initial alternatives to be commented on by the public and also the City of Plymouth Board and also County Board of Supervisors. On May 9th, one of the options that we're presenting today, option 6, a similar option to that was presented to the City of Plymouth and it was approved to move forward with the HSIP application. On May 14th, we brought it to the Board of Supervisors here for just initial ideas and presentation and to hear some public comment on. I believe at that time we had 4 or 5 different options or, spin-offs of different options. Subsequent to that, we came back on June 4th for a special public meeting to further vet some of the options that we had. At that meeting we discussed our design criteria and other selection criteria and addressed some public comments and concerns that were heard at the first board meeting on the 14th. And that brings us to today. And today we're a public works is seeking, requesting that the board select the preferred option. We have two, option 5 and option 6, which will be presented in a few minutes. And the second item that we're requesting is that if you approve and select a preferred option, that we provide direction on the actual HSIP grant application itself. So we have, in that respect, we have two options. The first option there for the actual HSIP grant application is to we can move ahead now and submit the application by the end of July and move ahead with the City of Plymouth on board. The second option we have there is we can either we can do that or postpone an application for the safety project to a later date where when it would just be just the county staff. So we have two options. Option 5, which is a minor build, which was identified at the subsequent at the previous meetings as being some minor alterations to Shenandoah Road to widen some shoulders and make some minor improvements at the existing intersection with Fiddletown Road. Option 6 is we consider it and we call it the full build, which realign Shenandoah Road to the northwest, and also realigns Fiddletown Road to intersect Shenandoah Road in a T configuration. The cost estimate for each of these options are: for option 5, the minor build is $240,000. For option 6, the full build, it came out about $1.6 million. In the memorandum, you see that I put a star by the full build. What you will see, this cost for the full build does include a left turn lane heading southbound on Shenandoah, turning left onto Fiddletown. That additional cost, which is included in the $1.6 million, is estimated at $230,000 for that particular little option. And then also for the option 6, the full build, this cost that's presented in the memorandum, it does not include the free through lane to Fiddletown, which has been an item of discussion over the past several meetings. One thing about the HSIP application, I believe it's limited to $1.5 million, with 80% federally funded, leaving the 20% local, which the county would be responsible for. And any costs over
20% local or 10%?
10.
Okay.
10%. Any costs over $1.5 million will be required to be 100% locally funded. So with that, Rebecca Nealon from Dock Engineering will come up and talk about the alternatives.
Jared, excuse me, I had a couple of questions for you. You mentioned the two options after or if we approve the grant application. The second one that we don't do nothing this year and we do it the following year and we go for the whole money and the county takes the lead. Is that correct?
It's the county will take the lead. It's the details of the arrangement with City of Plymouth and ACTC still would need to be identified and discussed. But maybe Aaron could.
I'll try to clarify that a little bit. Right now, if we have a current application, the City of Plymouth would be the lead on this because they're eligible for HSIP funding currently. Our HSIP qualification is tied up with the New York Ranch Road Ridge Road Intersection Project. So they're the vehicle whereby we can apply for this funding. And it keeps them involved with this project. Again, we would be working with ACTC and county staff would be driving it, but the City of Plymouth still has a little bit of opportunity to weigh in there. To what extent, we've got to determine that. If we applied for this on the next cycle after we cleared our red flag and we got New York Ranch Road Ridge Road Intersection Project delivered, then we could apply for this funding, and it would be strictly Amador County driving the process.
Does the New York Ranch Ridge Road intersection have to be completed through construction before we're able to apply for an HSIP grant?
I believe it has to be delivered. Yeah.
So we're probably talking 2 years out, realistically. Construction cycle next season, and then upon completion, the
following. Yeah, even if we got a late start this fall and finished it and then did the closeout.
Is HSIP funding considered or contemplated to continue on? I believe.
I know it's for next year.
For next year, but maybe not the next year, right, because of MAP 21 is my.
Yeah. Rebecca, do you know? The transport, yeah, that's the correct assumption.
And if we wait that long, too, also, too, the costs might vary from what they are presented today to this board.
Just wanted you to have the option.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, sir.
So, Aaron, one last question to your point that City of Plymouth ends up being lead, Amador County administers the project. To what level of influence and or comment and or control does that leave the City of Plymouth with over this county project?
I think it would be minor in nature, but that's still be done.
One thing I will say.
It's our dollars that we're spending.
One thing I will say, I went to the City Council meeting where they discussed this, and I would say most of the City Council was real. They seem real willing to work with the county, and some have flat out stated in basically in their meeting that, hey, this really, they're trying to help the county, It's really the county's project, and, you know, it's not their, they don't want to be in their directness how to build the project and where and when, and they just wanted to accommodate the county. So I think it seemed, the city council seemed pretty, pretty willing to help the county and work with us. I had a good feeling from the meeting that it'd be a good working relationship.
So is there any indication that if we were to choose the full build option today and put that before the Plymouth City Council as our proposed design spec for this, that it would be supported?
You know, that's a hard question. I would think it would. The only thing I can see that might bring a problem up is I think originally was looked at, kind of what was being looked at was redoing that intersection with a free through lane to Fiddletown. So now whether that may change things, I really don't know. I don't think so.
Here's where I'm coming from. You know, if we did the full build out, we don't have the money to do that. You know, it's going to obviously go over into our budget and have to come out of our reserves or whatever, money that we really don't have to spend on it. So I'm thinking that we might be better off waiting for another cycle and do the full build out and try to come up with more money to get the thing done. I mean, there's inherent risk in waiting too and putting it off, but if you do something minor, is it really going to help? I don't know. You know, look at how many times we've redone New York Ranch Road.
I hear your point, Supervisor Boitano, and I was thinking the same thing. Well, could we do a minor build, and would that suffice? And I had a couple of different people tell me something. I thought, well, it probably won't, because they said, you wouldn't believe what I saw the other day. And then somebody else told me the same thing. I don't think they saw the same person either. What they observed is these people, I don't know where they were, they're somewhere in the intersection, they saw two cars, or at least two cars, heading up Shenandoah Road towards Fiddletown, Shenandoah Y, the split there. And one car, the first car, put on their blinker and started going towards Fiddletown. Got over in that, basically in that lane, the right turn lane. And the other car stayed in the lane heading towards Shenandoah Valley, and proceed to speed up, and when they got right at the Y, they went in the oncoming lane coming down the hill from Fiddletown and went on and swerved over and then passed the person there and went on towards Fiddletown. And this happened twice. And I thought, boy, that sounds kind of, I mean, I guess if everybody's paying attention, nobody's coming, and everybody knows what they're doing, I guess it's, I won't call it safe, but it's probably accomplishable.
You know, when I had the company out, we took them over there, and it was, we went through the intersection a couple times in the course of a weekend, and one or two of the times it was pretty dicey. You really have to pay attention to what's going on.
If you're paying attention, you're not
the one making the mistake. Somebody else is.
That's the problem. If you're paying attention, you're probably okay, but if you're going through there and somebody's not paying attention or changes their mind at the last minute, it's kind of an issue. You know something, I'm not an engineer, but the numbers just, look at the terrain, the soil, the numbers seem a little high to me on the dirt work, they just do. And a question I'd have is, we've got two different numbers here, and maybe the one number, the lady from Thock Engineering, it's Rebecca Nealon. We'd asked about the left turn pocket, and she came up with a number, reduce that cost by $370,000, no left turn pocket. That was when we were doing the evaluation of alternative comparisons. And so that was reduced by $370,000. And now I see you're saying, looking at our paperwork here, there's no left turn lane or pocket. It's reduced by $230,000. I was wondering, what's the difference here? Were your numbers rough, or which is the right number?
Well, when we were talking at the last meeting, it was a rough number because it was based on the number for the alignment that was further
west. Yeah.
The alignment further in the hill, so it had a lot more earthwork, and I was trying to come up with an approximation of if it's moved out into the flatter area, what would that earthwork number be? And I gave you an approximation at that meeting. We went back and actually ran it, and I can show you the profiles.
Okay.
So it's a more accurate number.
The 240 is a more accurate number? Okay.
You know, and I'd say that myself and Supervisor Onetto met with staff to go over some of these numbers and or alternatives, and it was also discussed that with the current estimate of 1.6 million, that there's probably room for some, I believe it's called value engineering, to very potentially get that cost down to the maximum amount awarded through the HCIP program.
Yeah, to reiterate, right now our numbers are based off of using a USGS topo, which is good to 20 feet. So you know, you put a survey on the ground and actually figure out where things are truly located, those numbers for excavation could change, be reduced, but that's correct. And we've included the option for the left turn lane, which was $230,000, which you guys just discussed. And if we got down in this project, and we'd have another decision point where if it's going to be $1.6 million, we're going to be over because of that left turn lane, and we have traffic data that either supports the need for that left turn lane, that's something that we can look at a later point. There's other options that we can do. We can make reductions from this in order to get a project constructed.
And stay under that
$5 million budget. That's correct.
No, that was essentially my point. You got minor items here of $134,000 and mobilization of $90,000 and a contingency of $90,000. You know, those three items collectively are well in excess of the overage over the HCIP grant amount.
Yeah, and so the 1.6 does include the left turn lane?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I thought I just wanted to just make sure, because some of the stuff's a little bit confusing, because, well, just in anyway, there's looking at, I wasn't sure if it was the one in the map in the front or in the back that went with the 1.66 number. So it'd be basically the 1.66 is basically with a left-hand turn lane.
And the provision that we made as a subcommittee on this, and if the directors will look, or supervisors look at their maps of the drawing of this, we added a much wider and I guess you'd call it a longer radius to the inside of the curve to make a right turn going up to Fiddletown from eastbound Shenandoah to help traffic wanting to make that turning motion to be able to get over into the right side and continue on through that intersection without slowing up the through traffic all that much.
Sure.
So we widen that radius out quite a bit.
I think it'd be helpful people going towards Fiddletown too to make the turn better.
Help with visibility for anybody leaving Fiddletown making that left-hand turn motion too. They'll be able to see past the first car in line a little better.
You know, I like the idea of going forward with a full project. I'd like to know one question I have as far as if a match. Because I think we probably, if we even have to leave out that left turn pocket, which I think when all the numbers come in, I think we can probably keep that in. Be my guess. Like Supervisor Plow was saying, some numbers are pretty. They're healthy there. I think there's a lot of room. And if we can't, we can always pull that left turn lane out and still build the project. And I would like to know also about the $150,000 match, where we can come up with that.
That would come out of the either reserves or CIP. It's a CIA named CIP project, so we have reserves for CIP projects. And then we also have our budget that we do annually that we can include funding for this. It wouldn't be $150,000 in 1 year. It'd be over 3 years.
You think that's advisable, looking at your budgets and the money you have?
And is a portion of this in-kind funding? I mean, staff time, does any of our own engineering get calculated? It doesn't. We don't get to count that as match.
Unless we did the design.
In-kind is really difficult to...
But you could ask. Would it be a real hard, rigorous, expensive process to ask? Is it something you would do or is it something the county would do, could do?
I could do it. The county could probably do it. It's certainly worth asking.
Sure.
It's
where I'm coming from, you know, if we can afford to do it, I'd rather do the ultimate thing here and do it right the first time rather than, you know, we go and do the minor changes, then 5 years down the road it's not working and we got to do it again. I think you're just throwing money away at that point. So
I was wondering about the same thing. So there, I got your reports back about people going on, coming lane and passing. I thought, you know, it's just not going to work if we do that. I was thinking about, we save the money and widen it and make it work, but there's too many loose ends of the way it is there now.
They'll go faster.
Yeah, they probably would.
So, Supervisor Boitano, I have a question for you. I'm sorry, Supervisor Bonetto. You stated the left turn lane on option 6. Isn't that rated at $230,000?
Yes, but one of her earlier meetings, it was she'd said it'd be about $370,000. But I think she's talking about in the shorter approach build, and then once it got moved farther out in the field to the west, then I think that cost probably came down because the terrain was probably more amenable to building it. So the $230,000 would be correct.
Okay, my other question for you is, if we do option 6, you want the free through lane to Fiddletown, correct? Or are you thinking about not doing that now?
You know, I don't think the money's there for it. And I think it'd be nice, but I think also if we open up that throat down there at the base of the T, I think that would kind of be splitting
the problem split down the road.
It's not a free through lane, but it'd be kind of helping people get some momentum to go up that hill. I like the free through lane the way, but also you're still going to have a conflict with top, probably not a bad one. But I know anytime people got to merge, I see the Highway 1649. There's a big arrow with a little arrow coming in, and the people coming up Highway 16, they're the ones that should give on the right of way. Well, for some reason, they think they got the right of way, and there's always pushing and shoving right there, Highway 1649. I know I've been involved in a couple of it.
Well, it's kind of there already. We can't utilize it.
You know, that's something I'm glad you brought that up. I meant to ask that. If we did, what's the chance of using the lane that's already there? I mean, how would that fit in with your...
There would potentially some. I know that we're going to be regrading it near the top where the two would overlap. But
sure.
There is the potential there. That's just something that we need to get investigated once we get some better data.
And something we could, if we go to the full project, we could still, if that came out as something we wanted to do, we could still change it at that point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just make it one wide lane.
Yeah. It's worth there. I mean, it's worth looking at.
Yeah.
The challenge with that is this is coming up in grade here a little bit.
I was going to say that.
Trying to bring
it
down here. Profile. So there's a transition where you're kind of flat and you're climbing up the hill here, that you would have to transition into this kind of smoothly. That's where the majority of the costs would come from. I mean, yeah, we'd be able to use some pavement that's still down here, but we still have to transition from there to here, wherever those limits end up.
I understand. It's worth leaving it in there until we get down, you know, to what we got to do. It's worth a chance. You might be able to make it all work out if the numbers work.
Yeah, that's worth it.
Or maybe later.
Plane in?
Yeah.
Is that what this?
Yeah.
Just leave this in, but make it. It's already there. Why not utilize it?
I was remembering Aaron's comments from before when that suggestion was made about the profile transition and so forth. Is.
Yeah, and again,
challenge.
I understand the challenger, but, you know, maybe at some point don't can that totally. And if it's there, maybe at some point in time we get another grant and utilize it.
Well, my question is to Aaron, is it less of a challenge now or will it be more of a challenge if we leave it there?
More of a challenge for what?
The lane going straight to Fiddletown, like Supervisor Boitano just mentioned.
Probably people trying to use it.
I was going to say unauthorized use of it.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to block it off if you don't use it. As simple as that, because people will try to use it.
If we didn't have that, if it was eliminated, you'd grind that out and you'd demo that asphalt, so there would be no asphalt going.
Couldn't set K-rails there so people couldn't.
Or guardrail. We may get into this project and we can trim some costs from the topo and, you know, where we cut it down out of that $660,000 and maybe there's more money to play with down the road, but right now we're looking at $1.6
million.
Yeah.
You know, we just, I wouldn't cost a lot of money to look at that just superficially, would it, if you're going along saying...
After we get the topo, I mean, if we move forward and we're successful with this application, we could look at that.
Pretty easily.
Yeah, I don't think it gives us much benefit looking at it anymore right now. We don't have any better information than we had
two
weeks ago or today.
I wouldn't be in favor of spending any money on it. I mean, people all over the county have to learn how to navigate a right-hand turn, you know, to try to spend more money on this for purely a convenience maneuver for some.
Well, I can certainly understand somebody trying to, with a big truck or a motorhome, trying to get up the hill. It's no fun when you get a start in Compaing.
That's why we added the longer radius to that right-hand turn.
Still got to get up the hill there.
No, but I think it, I understand where you're coming from, but I think with that bigger radius would help. And also, if you're moving that out the west, it's flat there, so there you got some flat ground to get going on, which would be real helpful.
But if you got to stop and start from low gear, you're gonna go up the hill slow. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, but then you're gonna have to stop there for that right hand turn.
Yeah.
So, but I understand what you're saying. If you got to stop in granny gear, oh yeah, it's always nice if you guys be able to grab a couple gears before you get going. Yeah. That keeps everybody else behind you happy too.
Right.
That right-hand turn there on option 6, Aaron, is it wide enough for school buses, 44 feet long?
Absolutely. I think the stripe on there, you can see the stripe, that's what's required. But all that blue area to the south of that stripe is the kind of the overbuild to allow for off-tracking and make it more negotiable turn.
Thank you. Other comments from the board? Okay, we're going to open it up to the public. From the public? Then seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
You know, I'd make a motion that we go ahead with the application for the HSIP grant under option 6, which would be the full build, and I guess it'd need to be submitted by the end of July.
Next full build?
Yes.
As presented here.
Okay.
Yes. Including the left-hand turn lane?
That's the full build with left-hand turn lane, yes.
Okay. Second.
Under discussion, we get down the road and we find we can't afford to do it, we can let this grant go.
Let it go or do the minor build. Yeah.
Fine with that.
Okay. I'm sure that there'd be some engineering costs we'd probably have to pay, but that's a question under discussion maybe. Well, I'd like to ask Ms. Nealon or Aaron.
If we move forward with this project and we get to a point where we can't do it, if we get through the environmental process, we can terminate the project. And we're still responsible for 10% of the costs up to that point.
Okay, so...
And then we can reduce the scope of the project, too, through the environmental process.
So what about the engineering costs? What percent would we be responsible for?
We're still responsible for the 10% match. We submit invoices regularly.
So even if we said, hey, you know what, this isn't doable, we're out of here, we have to pay 10% engineering costs.
All the reason more why we should try to do as much of that in-house as we can. We've hired a capable young man now capable of doing that. Let's draw on those capabilities.
Yeah. No, I just want to make sure we're going to have, you know, $200,000 in engineering costs at the point we say, you know, hey, it's coming too expensive. We don't want to do this. And
well,
that would hurt.
Oh, that would be responsible for the $20,000.
Okay.
If we get to that.
That's livable.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. The thing is, I don't think anything could ever be wasted.
No.
Even if we had the plans for the ultimate build-out and we couldn't do it, we shelved them because I guarantee you, you're going to come back and put the ultimate in sooner or later.
To that point, if we had a project that we could that was shelf ready or shovel ready, with environmental clearances and another ARRA type funding came up, and we had something that was shovel ready, that would be a great option at that point in time, because it's very difficult to get a project ready for ARRA funding similar to the last cycles of ARA, because you can't do the environmental clearances, you can't get the right-of-way in that short a time frame.
I kind of agree with all the comments that were here done at the board.
Except ARA funding. But.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. There you have it. Staff, you got direction?
All right, Rebecca, are you going to be in the office today, all day up there?
Okay, at this time, the board's going to take a little break before we go into our 10:30.